everybody.
If you want, you can, or I can move myself, or if you like, you can come a little more around this way, so we're more in a circle, and we can see all see each other. Before we start, do you usually go for a certain amount of time and then have a break in the morning, or what's the usual?
Every
teacher's different. Well, I'm not a hard taskmaster or here to make you tired or anything, so I know you've had, I hear that you've been having a very intensive experience with the course, and everyone's maybe a little high in bhakti and enthusiasm, but low in energy, maybe. So I hope that this will be something that's also rejuvenating, but I'm not too strenuous or anything. So, but we finish at 12, is it? Or
1:30.
1:30. Okay. Okay. That worked well, like a 10-minute break.
Yeah, just so that we can
refresh. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, it's such an Amazon does it. And follow that program. So, I was going to say welcome, but actually, I should welcome myself because you're all the residents here. I'm really honored and really grateful to be here with you, and I really thank my dear friend Manu for inviting me, because when he asked me, I really, although I felt enthusiastic to do this, at the same time, when I saw who the other teachers were on the course, I thought, why would I also teach, or what can I teach? I'm sure maybe if any of us were asked to teach a course at this point in our learning, because I feel I'm in the same place as you all, we're just learning and discovering, you know, what our relationship is with kirtan. We might feel like, oh, what am I going to say, or what do I have to share? But one of the most wonderful things about trying to teach or share something is that you learn more than, you know, more than you ever expect. So I'm grateful to accept this opportunity so that I will learn and hopefully be able to share something of value with you. So, you know what the title of our course this week is? I would say it's not really a course. I hope it's more of an experience that I would like to share. Because honestly, I'm not a scholar. I'm not an expert on Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and I'm not really an expert in anything. So I don't have any kind of, you know, really educational, informative presentation to share with you. But what I do have, what I've been blessed to experience, is a kind of immersive experience in chanting the prayers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. A few times in my life I was given that opportunity to take part in that kind of... Balaram was there one time when we did it in Mayapur, and Manu also has experienced that. And for me, it was very transformative to my life and spiritual kind of growth. So I would love for us to create that experience again here, and I'm sure we will, because whenever these prayers are chanted, even if it's just you just do one song, it's a very, very powerful experience. So before we start, most of you I know. To some degree, personally, either just by name or a little bit more. But maybe we can just go around the room and just say your name and anything else you want to share about maybe your experience of the course so far, so have a sense of where you're at and what's been inspiring you so far. And you can also maybe share something about what you a little something about what you know about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, or what you would hope to get out of studying about him for the next 5 days. Hopefully that's not too many things to remember. Just have a go. Let's start with Prashant. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think Bhaktivinoda Thakur is also been very important acharya in my life, and helps me to go deep in my spiritual life. So, but usually we don't take much time to chant his prayers so I really hope with your help I can go even deeper, and actually also will be later just able to think in a more deeper level and think that more.
Thank you.
You just want to learn.
I was kind of curious that, like, everyone's like, how approachable it has to this. There's so many ways, both his backstory, and he was very, very solid as well. And then, of course, this week in the prayers. I've always been a little intimidated because I guess I just stick to the mantra. Because it's a little more advanced, I thought. And then, when Rabbi told me yesterday, I was like, really? Because I've seen it in Vrindavan, so sometimes they do, like, in his honor. But yeah, so I'm very curious. Mm.
Yeah, it can be very intimidating, and it's interesting that in ISKCON, or rather like in Gaudiya Vaishnava culture, these prayers used to be sung every day. Many of them, like there's many that he wrote that were for all specific. You know, this should be sung before eating khichdi, and this should be sung, you know, before this thing, and all the different aartis, and many of them were very commonly. But then, you know, in bringing that culture to the West, Srila Prabhupada highlighted few specific ones, and the rest were excavated by Achyutananda Swami, who was looking for all these songs. But then, after a certain time, they more and more fell out of practice of being sung for different reasons. One reason is that many people are the language is just so unfamiliar that it's just intimidating and you don't necessarily connect with it so well. So I hope we can get past that a little bit and find you start to make friends with them, and they're like your friends, your companions.
For me, I don't know much about I have read a lot of his songs, his prayers, and I have a lot of recordings of the information of the song, and so I don't know much about his life story. I think I've heard little bits and pieces here and there, but I get confused with all the acharyas, so it'll be really nice to focus on him, because I know he was, you know, very, very important for Kirtan and for the musical tradition.
I guess I can echo what most people have said already. I don't know that much. In preparation for this week, I read a little bit about his life and sort of how important he was as a scholarly and as a magistrate and dealt with this mystic yogi.
That's some very cool stories.
that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm sort of not sure which of his prayers and which aren't, and I'm really disappointed.
I wish I were there for that. I know a bit of Vinaya Thakur, his past life, his story, his life, and a few of his prayers was just about touching him. It was like he found the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's quite a beautiful past. Yeah, just looking forward to it, learn more about his prayers, his past life.
Thank you.
Balaram Das. I was really excited to be in your course because I know you were really close to Mother Yamuna. I had such a good experience doing those bhajan, so I'm looking forward to experiencing them again. Yeah. Exciting.
It is exciting.
Krishna and Dalida and mode of ignorance. But I'm looking forward to hopefully move on at some point. Looking forward to hearing that.
Hello, I'm Dominic. I know less like that. And I'm really happy to go deeper into the things.
Wonderful.
Hi Krishna. I'm Vishwara Haridas. And yeah, I'm very happy to be here. I'm looking forward for your presentation. A few times I read this nice book, Sharanagati. This is a version from Sachinanda Swami.
Yes.
And actually you can find all the important knowledge from the Vedic scriptures in the songs. It's very, very deep. And all this insight is so nice.
We're going to be singing these songs. Yeah, thank you.
Hi Krishna. And what? I'm hoping to learn at least one song of Bhaktivinoda Thakur here.
Great.
Now also for me it's important that when I learn songs to know the meaning of each word, because if I learn the song and I know just the whole thing, I can connect to each word. But if you know each word, it's better and you can go deeper.
I like your point about the meaning, because for me I find the same thing. Unless I can really connect with the meaning as I'm singing it, it's hard to get into the mood of it. And you'll find that the more that you, I mean, maybe some people are different according to how you are with languages, how much you're at ease with picking up new words and things, but the more you sing these songs in Bengali, you'll start to pick up a lot of words, and then you'll naturally start to connect with the meanings as you're singing. It will start to come, you know, more easily. But I'm not sure, the song sheets that we're going to use don't have a word for word meaning, but you can get that online in different books. They'll have, you can then you can study it more deeply like that. Do you speak Bengali?
A little bit.
Okay. Okay, thank you so much. Well, I'm excited to hear that you're excited, and I'm also excited. So I'll tell you a little bit about what my plan was for this week, and you know, we can be flexible. I'm really open to just feedback, or if anything you want to, you know, pause longer on and go more deeply into, or you want to move forward. When I was trying to put together a course for the week, I was really overwhelmed because there's so much to talk about or so much to share together. So I just thought best just focus on one thing, maybe one of his books. Although I have a backup plan as well in case we whiz through that and we want to do other songs and all things. You know, there's so much. But my basic plan was that let me show you what. Yeah, so I wanted us to connect with him as a person, as an acharya. So to really feel a personal relationship. And I've had the good fortune to start to develop that through the experience that I had. And that's, we would sing his songs, and at the same time, just before, we would read from his biography, or rather we were reading from his autobiography. There's a book called Swalakita Jivani. Actually, it was not a book, it was a letter that he wrote to his son, Lalit Prasad, telling about his whole life in very, very descriptive and sometimes very humorous and revealing detail. So this book, The Seventh Goswami, by Rupa Vilas Prabhu, he took pieces from Swalakita Jivani and other sources and combined it into one really nice book. So I really recommend this if you want to read more deeply. We'll read sections from this. We won't have time to read. I mean, when we did these bhajan sessions, we could go for a whole month, and we were doing every day, and we still didn't get through everything. So we're going to have to do a little bit of a condensed version, but we'll read sections from here. So hopefully we can get more of a sense of his personal life and an understanding of where he was coming from a little bit in writing these prayers. When I say an understanding of where he was coming from, of course that's all relative, because we know that actually he's a Paramahamsa, pure Vaishnava. He's an incarnation from the spiritual world. He reveals who he is in the spiritual world, even in his songs. So he's not an ordinary person that we can just kind of, you know, a songwriter, we can kind of get inside his head and what is he writing about? Like here on the Eurostar, I was flipping through the magazine that was in the back of the seat, and they were interviewing this songwriter, Damien Albarn, and he was talking about his influences and different things. And I was thinking, you know, even for supposedly deep artistic people, you can still, you know, kind of get into what it is that they're writing about. But, you know, Thakur, it's a completely different thing. He was a prolific songwriter, but he was writing about things that most of us, you know, on our own, we wouldn't be able to delve into, we wouldn't be able to understand. But through his writings, he's made it accessible. He's made this, he's opened this door that we're able to actually walk through and stand there and see something, feel, taste, touch, and actually start to understand what it feels like to pray as a pure Vaishnava, because that's how he was praying. So that was a lot to say, connect with the author. So we're going to connect with the songs. I want to everyone to feel more and more comfortable, ideally, in singing in Bengali. I think probably you'll all be fine with it, but sometimes people find it a little challenging, just, you know, the words, knowing the pronunciations and things. It's a little different from Sanskrit. And then during the week, apart from singing the songs and reading from the biography, we might do some other things just to help enhance our experience. We'll definitely be having lots of Mahamantra Kirtan, and it will give us a chance to see how singing these songs and then having Kirtan side by side, how the two enhance each other, how it's almost like, anyway, you'll see how you feel with this, but this, the song kind of comes as a bud and then it flowers in the Mahamantra, and then it's like a whole other experience, because there's some feeling there, there's some mood that you're singing with. And we'll also do some things like later on this week. I wanted us all to write our own letter to Bhaktivinoda Thakur when we start to feel more of a connection and relationship. So, yeah. Okay. I just wanted to mention that on the altar here, in the black frame, is Her Grace Yamuna Devi. So if you don't know who she is, I'm sure, well, everybody knows usually her Govindam prayers playing in the morning. She's a very, very unique and special disciple of Srila Prabhupada, one of the first. And I had a very good fortune to have quite a lot of association with her in the last 7-8 years. And she, this was something that she particularly focused on in the last years of her life, was singing the prayers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So because of that, I got to, she uncover that relationship for me and uncover that activity. She introduced me to that. So I put her picture here so that I can meditate on it, and that we can all, even if we don't have a personal relationship with her, can offer gratitude that through sharing in this way, just as one day you will probably share with another, that it kind of expands. So she once said to me, she said, oh, I have this desire that one day in the world, this was after we had all been chanting together some bhajans, she said, one day in the world there'll just be circles of people chanting Bhaktivinoda Thakur's prayers all over the world, and there'll just be like lights, you know, like there's all these people singing these beautiful prayers. So I, at that time when she said that to me, I think I was like 19 or 20, and I was thinking, oh, I hope we can can all gradually, you know, start to create that. So she's there, and she had a beautiful story with Srila Prabhupada, where one day when they were at Tittenhurst, which was John Lennon's estate, she was sitting, and Srila Prabhupada at that time, the movement was just only beginning in England, so there was a lot of free time because they were just establishing things, meeting people. So in Prabhupada's free time, he would often sit down and sing bhajans by himself usually. So one day she had been cleaning and she heard Srila Prabhupada chanting. So she went and she sat down on the stairs outside his room. So she describes how, she said, Srila Prabhupada's harmonium playing was completely unique. You've all heard in recordings how he played. She said it was like a babbling brook. You know, a brook is like a stream and it flows over the rocks. And she said it would rise and fall, and it was so pleasing to hear. She was sitting there on the stairs and hearing him chanting. And then at a certain point he finished the bhajan and he called out Una. He called her name, so somehow he knew she was there outside on the stairs. And so she went inside and she said, oh, Srila Prabhupada, that was so beautiful. And she said he looked a little bit shy, you know, he looked a little, not embarrassed, but humble. And he said, oh, you liked it? And she said, yes, I loved it. So then he asked her, what's your favorite bhajan? And she said, at that time in the movement, they didn't really know any songs, so she didn't really know what to say, but she said, oh, I really like Shikshastakam. And he said, oh, yes. And she asked him, what's your favorite bhajan? And he said, oh, this one that I was singing, which was Hari Hari Bifale by Narottam Das Thakur. And then he told her that the songs of Narottam Das Thakur and Bhaktivinoda Thakur particularly, he said they're like thunder and lightning. He clapped his hands together. You know how when you hear lightning, you hear it and you feel it in your heart, but you don't need to necessarily see it or understand where it struck. You just feel it. So he said, like that, the spiritual potency is there. Just in singing them, they'll deeply affect the heart. They'll start to transform us just by the power that they're carrying from these great acharyas. So I thought that was I always think about that before singing these. Okay, so let's begin our session. We'll sing this prayer every day. This is our pranam mantra for Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Namo Bhaktivinodaya Satchinananda Namo Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupanindavaraya. I should have put the English translation as well. It's in the songbook, yeah. I know it, but I don't want to say it wrong. If I'm here's the songbook. Okay. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Satchidananda Bhaktivinoda. So we'll learn later on in his life story how he got the name Satchidananda, because his name at birth was Kedarnath. Kedarnath, that who is the transcendental energy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is a strict follower of the Goswamis, headed by Srila Rupa. So before we sing this, we'll also sing Om Agyanatim Anandasya as well. This is something that Yamuna Devi told anyone she was guiding or instructing that they, before beginning anything, they should sing this prayer, because Srila Prabhupada told her the same thing. He said, when you chant this prayer before any activity, then by the grace of Guru, it becomes possible. The impossible becomes possible. And he used an example that there was one of his disciples, Govinda Dasi, when they were doing all these intensive book marathons to publish Srila Prabhupada's books, they needed more people to be typists. So he asked her, do you know how to type? And she said, no. And he told her, just keep chanting this prayer and you'll see. And actually very quickly she became like a very, very skilled and fluent typist. And her husband became a Sanskrit, he was doing Sanskrit translation, and he before that had no experience with that whatsoever. So he was saying, just chant this prayer. So we'll see what happens when you do that.
Twice. Let's pray that this week we can take
deserve this opportunity. It doesn't come very often in life that we're able to delve into these prayers like this, because life just moves very fast. You all know this. When we leave this community, when we leave this room even, there's not very much spare time to do this kind of thing. So let's pray to really soak it all in like a sponge, and that He gives us, He blesses us, gives us His mercy, that this experience unfolds throughout our life and becomes something very, very, very transformational through developing this relationship. Four prominent ones. That's Sharanagati, Gitavali, Kalyana Kalpataru, and Gitamala. He wrote other ones as well, but this is those are the most prominent ones. Sharanagati, I thought it was important to focus on because, for instance, Gitavali, I was talking with my dad about this actually, and he was kind of thinking like, Gitavali is another one that's very, very popular, and the songs are very joyful and celebratory, and maybe we can sing some of them also this week. But it's almost like the fruit, and Sharanagati is more like the roots and the trunk, that you kind of need those things first. Sharanagati is all about surrender, you know, Sharanagati means surrender. And as we'll learn, Sharanagati is broken down into six principles. So by meditating on those six things and singing through these songs, I hope that we'll get a chance to really connect with each of them and go through that journey ourselves. So we'll go into what those six things are and more about the songs that we're going to sing a little bit later. But first let's start with reading a little bit from this life. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life is so dramatic and interesting. I always, whenever I read it, I think somebody needs to make a movie of it. Or a play, at least. Maybe it'll be inspired, because I often thought it would be a fantastic play. There's so many episodes and stories, actually, that are rarely spoken about, which are just... he's just such a fascinating person. So, I apologize that the way that we go through his life story might be a little bit jumping over things, just because of the time constraint. So we'll begin by So you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was born in the 19th century. century. He was born he was born on September the 2nd in 1838 in Ulagram, which is a place in Nadia district of West Bengal. He was born into a very illustrious, wealthy family. At that time, if you were, you know, from an aristocratic family, it was really a very, very comfortable existence. You know, they had many, many servants and wonderful wealth. I mean, sometimes we read in the Bhagavatam about, you know, the way kings would, or in the Mahabharata, the way the kings would be, and you think, oh, it's so opulent, but that was from another time. But this was in the 19th century, and still, if you were from a, you know, wealthy or Brahmin family, it would be a very, very easy upbringing. So this is, he was born to an aristocratic family. He was coming in the line from one king of Bengal, Raj Krishnananda, who was actually the father of Narottam Das Thakur. So this is, that was seven generations before, so it's not like they were closely related, but he was coming in the line from Narottam Das Thakur. That's something I never knew. I thought it was very interesting. And one of the things that was most defining in terms of the historical context of his life is that he was growing up in the time of the British Raj, during the British rule in India. And of course it was a completely different place from how his ancestors had lived, because there was so much, not just tension in terms of, you know, struggling for rule of different areas and things, but the whole culture was being completely manipulated and transformed. The intellectual kind of elite of India were being kind of groomed to aspire for a Western ideal. They were being taught in English and taught that all of these things that were from Vedic culture were completely kind of backward and not worthy of study. So it was a very unique time, very interesting time to be growing up. So this chapter of the book is one that I really love, because we'll learn today about his life as a child and his schooling. And I think it's very, I won't say too much more, but it's very unique, because a lot of our acharyas, apart from maybe Srila Prabhupada, we don't really have the opportunity to know that much about their life in terms of even as how they felt about things as a child and their different experiences. We kind of know them as they are, at their height of whatever it was that they were sharing or giving. But here we have an opportunity to see his whole life from beginning to end. So we'll read, we'll pass the book around. Maybe you'd like to start. So this book, I kind of just put a pencil mark on the different paragraphs you can see on the side. So some parts we can leave out. But please read it. Read this book outside the course, because it's really, really good.
So here at the beginning. And then how far are you passing on to?
Yeah, so like one paragraph or two paragraphs.
Yeah.
Already brought a couple of facts and also more discussion
earlier. Kedarnath's first school was on the veranda of his maternal grandfather's puja building, where many of the village boys used to gather for their education. The teacher was very forbidding, and the boys were afraid of him. The Thakur says of this, "I had some recollection of going to a school run by Kartik Sarkar when I was 3 years old. Even now it comes to my mind, that cane he used to show." There were many festive occasions observed in the house of his grandfather, especially Durga or Jagadatri Puja, which was performed with great pomp. His mother's side of the family were mostly Shaktas, worshippers of Durga. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur recalls, "Hundreds of chandeliers would hang on the puja house. Lanterns would be wrapped around all the pillars and columns. All the guards at the doors would be dressed in sepoy uniforms. Numerous stout men dressed in golden embroidered cloths would come from Ranagas and Shantipur. Many bodyguards and soldiers used to accompany all these men. In terms of people, the scene was like a forest of humanity, and in terms of light, it was like a battle of Kurukshetra. The scene was filled with fireworks and rowdy pomp. Late at night, there would be a kavigana singing of poetic compositions. At dawn, I would listen, but the kavivadas, the reciters, would scream so loudly that it would hurt my ears. I can remember that we used to have 25 or 30 brahmanas from West Bengal come and carry the goddess to the place of worship and perform the worship. On the sixth day, two types of drums would be beaten and the sound would shake the whole puja house. On the ninth day, many goats and buffalo would be sacrificially killed.
Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, observe the sardonic humor. Everybody used to enjoy this occasion, except the goats and the buffalo. Most of the brahmanas and panditas used to come solely for the taste of the mutton. He continued, during Dola Yatra, another annual festival, there was singing and various kinds of sports. So much red dye was thrown about that everything appeared to be blood color. At this time, even the gods took part in the festivities. They would enter the temple courtyard, singing and throwing dye. Because of all their commotion, I would stay in a little distance away from them. I would enjoy watching the festival bonfire.
When he was 5 years old, he began his schooling, but the school was run by a cruel teacher who instituted a system of punishment utilizing older students, which kept the younger boys terrorized. Those who were a little older used to act as agents of the teachers and would harass the younger among us. We came late to school, the older boys would apprehend us. The rule was, whoever came to school first was hit with the stick once, whoever came second was hit twice, and whoever was third was hit three times, and the number kept increasing in this way. The routine was as follows. The younger student used to write their kakagas, ABCs, on the talapada with black coal. After a year, they would write their numbers on banana leaves, and after that, they made a copy on paper. All the older boys were taught accounting, which was the work of the office of Zamindar. From time to time, under the scrutiny of the teacher, we would learn the deliberation of the court. The youngest boys would lodge a complaint, and their witnesses and evidence would be deliberately upon as in a court. In the end, there would be the determination of punishment. All the decisions of the court had to be confirmed by the teacher. There were different kinds of punishment: twisting of ears, slapping, caning, and the paying of a fine. We saw our teacher as the personification of Yama, the judge of the dead. And the older student used to act on behalf of the teacher as if agents of Yama. Sometimes these older students would act on their own, and sometimes they would arrange a court on behalf of the teacher. Some boys would make false complaints and bring false witnesses to court, and other boys would administer punishment.
At one point, being intimidated by the older boys, Kedaranatha stole some jackfruit from his home for his teacher. His mother, however, found out and became very angry. When my teacher heard about this, he became frightened. He said that I should only take things that would not be noticed. Don't bring big things. The neighbor's children used to steal tobacco and give it to him. I used to steal soaked chickpeas and give them to him instead. Kedar Anatha's brother, Haridas, who also attended the school, eventually became so furious with the teacher and the boldness of the older boys that he took up the machete and entered the man's home while he slept. Kedar Anatha, who chanced to be present, took the machete from him and threw it away. The teacher immediately resigned and departed that very day, and another teacher replaced him.
After the end of his sixth year, he attended this Bengali medium school, where he studied as follows. We would begin in the morning by standing and loudly reciting the multiplication tables, addition tables, ganga tables, kavali tables, and so on. The older students would recite in a loud chorus. First, the older students would together say, four kavalis make one ganga. Then we, in the younger students' group, would immediately respond, four kavalis make one ganga. The recitation would proceed in this manner. When it was finished, we would sit down and write it all out. As we wrote, our teacher would often declare, say it, then write it. We would repeat the word in a loud voice and then write it. In the resulting tumult, no one could understand anyone else.
Kedar Ranatha used to sit and talk with the gatekeepers to avoid getting into difficulty with his brothers. The soldiers used to tell him stories and recite the Ramayana, to which Kedar Ranatha was very much attracted, and he began to recite the stories to his mother and maidservant. His mother was pleased and sent some gifts to the gatekeepers. In return, Srital Tiyoyari, the main storyteller, would share his ropis, dal and khichdi with Kedar Ranatha, and Kedar Ranatha would become very happy. These incidents serve to show how Kedar Ranatha was attracted to hearing about Ram and Krishna from the very beginning of his life, in preference to the playful sports of his brothers. This is a feature in the lives of great souls, as evidenced by the histories of others, like Maharaj Parikshit, Prahlad Maharaj, Uddhava, Narottama Das Thakur, etc., whose childhoods are described in the pages of the scriptures. Their primary attraction was to God and was exhibited from the very beginning of their lives.
I broke my glasses. The text are too small, so. Sorry. It's the last paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the boy used to wake up at night and talk to the night guards of the inner grounds, particularly one called Officer Nutt, who was very old but still used to carry his lantern, stick, club, and sword. Officer Nutt was as much trusted guard of Kedarnath's grandfather. He was fearless, a former dacoit robber. Kedarnath used to ask him many questions when Nutt was a dacoit. He had accidentally beheaded his own guru during a raid. Since that time, he had constantly chanted the holy name of Hari. Although only six or seven and incapable of understanding all of Nup's amazing stories, Kedarnath liked to hear him talk. Not the least of his attractions, but have been the almost constant vibration of the holy name issuing from his mouth.
On certain festival days, buffalo elephants' flight were staged. Huge buffaloes had their horns tipped with iron, and the elephants' tusks were similarly tipped, and then they were set loose to fight. Everyone would watch from the second floor of the buildings. Sometimes the buffaloes would win, and sometimes the elephants. on other days, the boys would write atop their personal elephant name Shiv Chandra, who would carry them to the places of entertainment during festivals. During this period, his maternal grandfathers were so wealthy that anyone in need could come to him for their necessities. The village was a very happy place and no one lacked anything. Hardly a day passed without some festival taking place. In those days, Ula was free from suffering. There were 1,400 good Brahmin families, and there were many Kayastra and Vaidya families too. No one in the village was without food. One could get by with very little in those days. Everybody was cheerful. People used to sing, make music, and tell entertaining stories. You could not count how many jolly, fat, bellied Brahmins there were. Almost everybody had a good wit, could speak sweetly, and was skilled in making judgments. Everyone was skilled in fine arts, song and music. Groups of people could be heard at all times making music and singing, playing dice and chess. If anybody was in need, they could go to the home of Mushtapi Maharshi, his maternal grandfather, and get whatever they required without any difficulty. Medicine, oil and ghee were plentiful. The good people of Ulagram did not know the need of finding work in order to eat. What a happy time it was.
When Kedarkaranatha was 7, the king of Krishnanagar established the college and invited prominent landholders and neighboring kings to send their sons. Kedarnatha, Kali Prasanna, his elder brother, and other boys from their family attended. Their nursemaid accompanied them, and they lived in a house in the midst of the bazaar at Krishnanagar. Next door to them lived an oil pressman who was about to die. He had arranged for the daily recitation of Mahabharata. Kedarnatha very much liked to hear the stories from the Mahabharata, and the stories about Bhima especially attracted his mind. He observed it. On certain days, the speaker would get a lot of things to eat, and on those days, he would be most eloquent. On those days, when he received nothing, his heart would be very depressed. On Saturdays, the boys would be brought home to Ula by palanquin at great speed and happily spend the weekends with their families.
Classes at the college were held at the official residence of the district magistrate, and an Englishman named Captain Richardson was the college principal. The son of the king of Krishnanagar, Bahadur Satish Chandra, was Kedarnath's classmate. Kedarnath excelled in English studies and received a class promotion and an award for his scholarship. After this, he was greatly praised all over Ula, especially by his father and maternal grandfather, as well as his mother and other family members. Even his former English teacher, a Frenchman, came for a visit and praised him greatly. Finally, Kedarnath's father put a stop to his being praised in the presence of others. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura observed, "Hearing all this praise, my pride became much inflated. In my mind, the importance of my reading and writing very soon amounted to nothing."
Kedarnatha's class performance fell off. The teachers began to chastise him, and the students gave him a hard time. He felt tormented and could no longer study. Instead of attending classes, Kedarnatha used to hide in the woods or pretend to be ill. His nanny was no longer present due to the boys having adjusted well to living in Krishnanagar. But one of their servants, a man named Keshi, and this took his mind and took his head. I finished and then.
Mm. Kedarnath's maternal uncle died, and after that many inauspicious things began to happen to his maternal grandfather. Mm-hmm. Numerous expenses came, swindlers took advantage of the elderly gentleman's generosity, and he fell into debt. All of his sons had died, and he was given the bad advice that he should marry again and try to produce an heir, but there was no result in the union. Somehow he maintained his status despite heavy debt. However, the elephant Shiv Chandra died, the horse was sold, the horse carriage also, and only a goat cart remained. The Durga festivals could only be celebrated by taking out loans. In his 8th year, Kedarnath's 2 brothers, younger brothers, Haridas and Goridas, successively died. His mother and father experienced deep grief and suffering on this account. That left only Kedarnath and his younger sister, Hemlata. Their nanny went everywhere with Hemlata on her hip and holding Kedarnath by the hand. His mother was so worried that none of her children would survive that she put many talismans around the neck of the children. One night, while Kedarnath slept, his father gave up his life and was taken to the bank of the Ganges at Shantipur. The house was filled with lamentation. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, "When I rose at dawn, I could not see father. There was no one around." At that time, Lalu Chakravarti and Parameshwar Mahanti had come from Orissa, and they had carried my father to the bank of the Ganges. Seeing everybody crying, I also began to cry. My honorable mother, being in anxiety, was weeping, and many people were trying to console her. Loud sounds of crying filled the house. My honorable grandfather closed the door. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur recalls, "Even while father was living, I began to become a little thoughtful. What is this world? Who are we? These 2 questions were in my mind when I was 10 years old. On some days, I thought I had the answers. On other days, I had none. One day in the evening, as the moon was rising, while I was wandering about on the roof of my father's parlor, I noticed that the moon was moving with me. I thought this must be the same moon that we saw in Krishnanagar, and that this small disk exists everywhere in the same fashion. I previously thought that in different places there was a different moon. But now, seeing the moon move, I concluded that it was the same moon everywhere. I would read the Ramayana, Mahabharata, Kali Purana, Anada Mangala from Bengali manuscripts and imbibe much lore in this way. I would discuss these edifying subjects with whomever I met who was a little learned. A learned man named Vachaspati Mahashaya would often talk to Kedarnath about spiritual topics and told him that there was no talk between the demigods and mankind in Kali Yuga. One day when the boy went to eat star apples in the garden near the parlor of his grandfather, he became frightened due to fear of a ghost that was reputed to stay there. Vachaspati Mahashaya described the forms of ghosts to him in some detail, and the boy became more frightened. However, he also had a strong desire to eat the star apples. He then spoke to the mother of a friend who was reputed to be an expert in the occult, and she told him that there was no fear of ghosts as long as one chants the name of Ram. He then became convinced in his heart that chanting the name of Ram was protection against ghosts. From that time on, he was not afraid to go out at dusk, and when he did, he constantly chanted the holy name of Ram. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur recalls, "At dusk, I would always utter the name of Ram. When walking about in the streets and alleys, I always chanted the name of Ram. I obtained such great satisfaction in my mind from this, that for many days afterwards, I took this medicine against ghosts. I heard that a ghost lived in the sacrificial fire building. Uttering the name of Ram, I chased the ghost away." Kedarnath had an elderly friend who was a sculptor who made backdrops for the goddess Durga. He told the boy that he had no confidence in anyone but Parameshwar, the supreme controller. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur remarks,
I had faith in the words of this old man. Becoming more inquisitive, he questioned the Mohammedan guard, who gave him a very imaginative explanation of creation, but confirmed that the holy name of God is the remedy for ghosts. Kedarnath was thinking in philosophical terms almost constantly. He recalls, "There were many thoughts in my mind. At one time I thought that this world was false, that the Lord alone was real, and that I appeared to be the Lord." His uncle's father was an eclectic worshipper who in the morning would first study Vedanta, then recite the Kalma like a Muslim, and then pray to God as a Christian. He gave Kedarnath the idea that God alone was the Supreme Person, that the Vedas know him as Brahman, the Quran as Allah, and that in the Bible he is called God. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur states, "I believed him." But later he remarked, "I was greatly confused. I was young and sensitive and had many questions. Seeing all this difference of opinion, my mind was not happy." His uncle Parshuram told him, "Oh Baba, everything comes from nature, and that is God. There is nothing separate from nature." Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, "Because all the conclusions were uncertain, I never gave up the name of Ram, which warded off fear of ghosts." Kedarnath was 11 years old at the time of his father's death. It was a very disturbing time for him, with uncertainty in all directions. He continued his studies, but his heart was not in it. He began to secretly drink castor oil to make himself sick, so that he wouldn't have to go to school, and he would often get fevers. He continued to think in a very philosophical way and wrote a poem called Ula Chandi Mahatmya about the deity of Ula, who is Durga, a book which, according to the Thakur, no longer exists. So we'll stop there. So we've gone from birth till age 11. Now you can see already what an incredible child and incredible characters there were in his life at that age, and how these different experiences start to shape him and allow his spiritual nature to be revealed. So let's have a little break, and then when we come back we can start with our Thank you.